adjust your dial. This is not a test. We control the airwaves. This is The Last Horror Cast.
Hello everyone, welcome to episode number 5 of The Last Horror Cast. As always, my name is Scott.
And my name is Doug.
And I think we're bringing you yet another fun-filled, off-the-cuff horror topic this week. But before we get into that, Doug, how is horror's favorite Canadian?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well.
I meant Cronenberg.
I don't know how he's doing. I assume fine.
Oh, of course we met you. Of course we met you. So you're up there in Kingston, Ontario, right there on one of the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
I'm going to be ignorant, though. I don't know which lake you're on. Which?
Oh, Lake Ontario.
It is Ontario.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a trick when I say I'm in Kingston, Ontario.
Yeah, well, I thought Lake Erie is right next to you and borders Ontario, too, doesn't it?
I only know the lakes that I can walk to from my house, so.
Okay. Well, yeah, for the listeners that don't know, I'm also a scuba diver on the side, and diving the Great Lakes is probably my biggest passion and interest, and I've hit 2 of the 5 so far in my life, and I think, you know, it's kind of a goal of mine before I die to get to all 5, so my plan is sometime in the not-too-distant future, I'm going to surprise Doug and show up on his door and have him take me to the lake.
That'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, I should let the listeners know in a little behind-the-scenes secret, I have no idea what you look like, so it'll be a complete stranger showing up at my door holding an oxygen tank, and I'm not sure how I'm going to react to that.
I'll probably bring beer, too, so you...
All right, you're welcome. Come on.
Excellent. All right, so before we get into the show, Doug, are you ready for a new segment that I'm going to introduce here?
Okay. You're just going to throw this at me on mic? Sure.
Yes, that is the reaction that I was hoping for, too. This is a segment that I am going to call Catch Doug Off Guard.
All right.
So each week I'm going to come up with some question to help break the ice, get the conversation started, and see if Doug can think quick on his feet, maybe get a little conversation going. So are you ready to play, Doug?
It doesn't seem like I have that much of a say in this.
Nope.
Sure, yeah.
All right. So this week's question on Catch Doug Off Guard is, you are approached by Hollywood executives, some big studio. They call you up and they say, "Hey, Mr. Doug, we know that you're the expert on all things horror. You've got the real finger on the pulse of what the audience wants. We're willing to make you an offer. We're going to give you an unlimited budget, unlimited resources, any director, producers, actors, anything you want. And you can make one of 3 projects. You can either A, make a TV show that is horror themed. We are guaranteeing you 12 episodes. B, you can remake any film that has already been made as a horror film, but you have complete creative control over the remake. Or C, you can make a brand new horror film that has never been made before, but it has to be based on a book. What do you do?"
Ooh. All right. So I go with the TV show.
Okay.
I take my 12 episodes. I use them to remake a movie with my complete creative control, and I do a proper version of World War Z.
Huh.
For those of you who aren't familiar with World War Z, the original book and the audiobook is actually really good. It's told in interviews. So there's a series of interviews that are all flashback to different points in the zombie war. And so I would take my 12 episodes, I would hire the team behind Band of Brothers and have them make this in a similar format where every episode we're getting our opening and our closing are the interviews, with the episode being the flashback to the various aspects of the zombie.
I have to say that is a much more thought out and thorough response than I ever would have expected for how I completely just threw you under the bus there. So,
sorry, I can come up with a stupider answer if you want.
Oh no, that was good, because it's better than, you know, the dead air that I'm going to have to go edit and cut out, you know, later, which is what I was expecting. So no, that was fantastic. Good use of Catch Doug Off Guard. So,
well, you've had time to think about it. So what is your very well thought out pre-planned answer that you must have?
You know, despite what you would think, I actually didn't think of my own answer to this question. So I don't have a good one, but I would probably do a TV show as well. And I don't know who I would use in terms of the cast or the directors or producers or anything like that, but I would like to see something modern in the same vein as, say, like Twilight Zone or Tales from the Crypt, you know, another type anthology show. Kind of, I guess maybe kind of like what Masters of Horror tried to be, but we can have a discussion on that sometime in the future. I'm not quite sure why that failed, but it just didn't quite work in the same way as, you know, I've got all 5 seasons of Twilight Zone and still go back and rewatch them constantly. I think they're fantastic. They still hold up. They're excellent. And even Tales from the Crypt, for as cheesy and 80s as it is still a fantastic little horror show. And I don't think that Masters of Horror, or what was the NBC version that came out later, The Fear Itself, was...
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think things like that are ever going to quite hold up or have the same longevity that those older shows do. And I don't know what the magic was that, or the formula that kind of worked, but for whatever reason, I would try to find somebody who could potentially do that again. But
that's really interesting. A game I like to play is I go onto Netflix and I call up the original Twilight Zone series and I find an episode that I know I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch it and then I just let it keep going and it'll automatically start a couple of more episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I end up watching ones that I've never seen that way. And it's kind of fun because you see some real good ones.
Well, and my wife and I will just put on, you know, the DVDs, but we kind of go sequentially through the whole 5 season run, and same general thing, like I've seen all of them over the years, some way more than others as I've gone back and rewatched them, but you kind of put them on and you'll kind of zone out or be doing other things in the background and then catch yourself and be like, oh wow, like this is one of those that I almost know the script to, and then another one comes on and somehow, even though you've seen it many times, it's brand new because you just haven't processed it or don't remember any details. So yeah, and even the twists, like the ones where you know exactly where it's going to come, it still is effective. It still works and kind of gives you the little goosebumps and the chills. And
I agree. I think the show still holds up really well.
Yeah. All right. So tonight's episode has nothing to do with the Twilight Zone or
not even
World
close.
War Z.
Nope.
We are talking about supermarket horror, terror in the aisles, grocery store horror. Who'd have thought that there would be more than one movie that we could watch in this category?
It actually turns out to be a lot more common than you would think. We had to pick and choose which ones to watch for this topic, right?
Yeah, there were a couple that were very close honorable mentions, and I think we picked two that, you know, were pretty good representations of what the genre was. But yeah, by far there's several more out there, and I was just shocked. One of the close runners up I know was a movie, Intruder or The Intruder.
Intruder.
Yeah, which harkening back to episode one, was another kind of slightly unknown Bruce Campbell film.
Yeah, well, Bruce Campbell only has basically a cameo in the film. I don't know. You've obviously not seen it, but it's basically just a slasher it's an excuse to kill people off. But the people you get to see killed off are like the Raimi brothers and some other faces that you'll recognize.
Hmm.
So I'd recommend it to you if you're a fan of Bruce Campbell. I think you'd like this one. And the special effects, I didn't know until I rewatched it for this episode, even though we're not talking about it, it's Greg Nicotero, who's famous for The Walking Dead now.
Oh, really? Okay.
So must be early in his career because the film is from somewhere in the early 80s.
Anyway, of the two horror movies we did pick for supermarket horror, what was your pick this week, Doug?
Well, I went with Alien Raiders from 2008.
Right, and I picked Bait or Bait 3D, depending on if you got to see it in theaters, from 2012. Not to be confused, as I was when I put this into my Netflix and it tried to send me the Jamie Foxx version from a few years prior. That's not the one we watched.
No, it has no sharks in it whatsoever. So.
That is not, yeah. So, yeah, you got Alien Raiders. I'd say let's just kick off the show with that. So go ahead and take us through plot synopsis of your pick.
Okay, well, Alien Raiders takes place entirely in one night. It is there's a grocery store, and just as it's shutting down, a group of what appear to be robbers come in. They take over the store, they lock the doors, and they have one guy who seems to be able to tell something about the other customers. He's walking up, he's touching them in the face, and he's having a reaction. And every now and again, they're killing one of the people that they are that he's touching and reacting to. It's revealed after not too long that they are, this group is not criminals. They're not there as a robbery. They are there to hunt aliens. And it's sort of a, they're sort of a team that has put themselves together, and they've got this one guy that can track them. The scenario ends up being, this team has taken control of the store. They are looking for a particular alien. We'll get into all the reasons as to why they're looking for one. And the cops are obviously outside. They've got the situation locked down. And the story progresses from there. That's the simple plot. We'll get into some of the details as we go. I don't know how spoiler we want to get in this one. It's a little lesser known film, so maybe we want to keep it a little quiet until we give people a warning. But
yeah, we can save some spoilers to the end for sure. I'm not real sure how spoilery it is. I mean, we can get to that. But general consensus right off the bat. How did you hear about Alien Raiders, and what were your kind of thoughts going into it?
Well, I told you the story last week that Kingstown Ted just showed up at my desk with a copy of the DVD, set it down, and said, "You guys should review this on your show." So that's how I heard about it. And the DVD has been sitting beside my TV ever since then. And I heard nothing else about the movie going in. It was literally a case of I know I have to watch this. There's no point in me having anything spoiled. So going in, I didn't know what I was looking for. I thought it was going to be a more fun movie. It's actually one that takes itself quite seriously. Mm-hmm. Considering the subject matter, I expected a lot more humor. As far as whether it worked for me, there were things in it that I liked. I think the gore was cool. Some of the atmospheric scenes were cool. I found the humor didn't work for me at all. There is, a comic relief character, and I just didn't find him funny. There's this very large, overweight store manager who has a few lines that I'm pretty sure were supposed to be jokes, and they didn't work for me at all. I don't know how you found that.
All I could see him as, and I looked through IMDb, and I couldn't find anything that I really knew him as, but he's like one of those kind of character actors that seems like a lot of different, overweight, nerdy side characters that gets made fun of in, every show, but he's not any of those characters. But, yeah, I just kind of found him an annoying backdrop.
Yeah, and I he wasn't enough of a problem that it impacted the parts of the film I did enjoy, but it was just kind of why are you, if you're going to have jokes in a movie, they have to be funny or else edit them out. Because there's a few moments where he's just at one point he threatens to fire one of the other employees for agreeing to work with the alien raiding team that has taken over all this. And it's like, well, you're not being funny. And I think you're supposed to be. If you're not supposed to be, then it's even worse, I guess. But what did you think of the film? Did you end up liking it? Or? I don't think you had heard of it until last week's show when I told you you had to watch it. So
no, and even when you first recommended it or mentioned it, it took me a while to even find it, so I completely went in spoiler free. I was pretty lukewarm on it. I honestly, what the movie felt like to me, the best description that I could give it was, it's a two-part movie, more or less. The first half of the movie is an extended version of the blood test scene from The Thing, only with less tension and excitement. The second half of the movie is a remake or another version of Splinter that we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Ironically, IMDb says people who like this movie also like Splinter. So,
I could understand why. And, obviously this is supermarket, Splinter was gas station, but neither one utilized the setting to its full extent. I think 90% of this film took place in the back room. So if you didn't know that this was a supermarket, you would forget very quickly. And there was very little use of, any of the groceries or the things on the shelf, the goods and services that could be used there. So, but it still had that same general feel that Splinter did of, you've got some sort of outside force, probably alien in both cases. I mean, in this case, it's obviously in the title, but some sort of science fiction, supernatural, weird force coming to invade. It seems to have the ability to possess its victims. they still look semi-human, but definitely have some monstrous qualities. And you've got a group of people who are stuck inside, but you also have a mix of those hostages that are trapped inside. You have a mix of like kidnappers or criminals that are there trying to cause problems, but that actually aren't truly villains, as well as their hostages. And there's even a scene that just like in Splinter, although it doesn't play out quite the same, where, you know, you've got cops showing up at the outside, and it's in very, very similar scenes. There were a lot of things that just played off the exact same way, and they didn't resolve the same way. But yeah, the second half of the film, it was very clear. Like I felt like I was having, extended deja vu.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting that in a couple of weeks, we're already kind of repeating ourselves with these themes and that, but, you're right. It's very similar to Splinter, and in my opinion, not done as well because it's not as much fun to watch. And I definitely found that second half of the film when they're running around the store chasing this alien. It's a person, but he's been sort of possessed by the aliens. That's how they work. They get inside your body and they sort of take over. And I found like that stuff was just, well, you're trying to do action, and action on low budget doesn't generally work for me. So I was having some issues with it, and I was like, I found myself checking my phone and things like that while I'm watching the movie. And I know I'm supposed to be paying attention because we're supposed to podcast about it, and I had a little trouble. It didn't maintain my attention in that second half.
You know, and that's exactly the way I felt. I think I made a note that said that it is very easy to drift, and I did that several times. And I never actually got up and left the couch, but, you know, frequently I was, you know, looking around, or I was on my phone, or I was petting the dog, or doing something that was very much not focused on the movie. I did snap immediately back into attention when there was a finger cutting scene that I was right back in at that point. But,
yeah, they're using the finger cutting there to test for aliens, and we eventually learn why cutting off someone's finger will let you know their fate, basically. And it was pretty good. It looked good. It was tense. They do it to multiple people. You see multiple people have their fingers cut off, and it's revealed that many of the team have been through this, and they've had, so they're not only are they cutting off these people's fingers, but they're storing them so they can have them sewed back on.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really cool. Like I did think that it dragged a bit how long they spent doing this test, but I thought the test itself was cool, and I thought it looked good. That part of the film really kind of worked for me.
Yeah, and it was like it wasn't the greatest gore because it was very subtle, but I thought it was done well. And yeah, you know, for being low budget to have something like that, and it's because the rest of the film didn't saturate you with that sort of imagery, that then when, like you and I have both said now, you know, we're kind of drifting, we're not really into the film, and then suddenly something like that kind of cuts, and you immediately snap back in because it's like, wow, this is kind of out of left field for what we've been seeing so far. I think it was effective, and, you know, didn't completely, they didn't try to go over the top with too much and make it, you know, obvious that they had no budget.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I will say they used the budget effectively. Minor spoiler, if you're an alien, your finger grows back.
Right.
And there's the scene where they find one of the aliens because we get the close-up on the hand and we actually see that finger coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
That looked really good, in my opinion. I thought that was really cool looking, and it was really neat effect, and I don't really know how they did it, but I liked it.
Well, and this was also a kind of a good point in the movie where the similarities to that scene in the thing kind of played out, where the difference is in the thing, like you care about the characters and you're kind of sucked in, and they've had a whole movie building to this, you know, very tension-based reveal. In this case, I didn't really care about who most of these characters were, and it didn't really matter to me which one was the alien, other than now I know who they're going to be chasing and trying to kill for the rest of the movie. But I still felt like there was a little bit of a mystery to it, enough to keep my interest, because you would expect that they're going to pull people in one at a time. Each time they do, it's going to be a, you know, false positive. Okay, this person's not the one. And so that just kind of keeps whittling it down, you know, Russian roulette style. And again, you know, minor spoiler, like, it's not what you would expect. It's not the person that you'd be immediately expecting it to be. And so it just kind of, throws you off and kind of plays with the timing a little bit to where you can never fully settle back into that kind of comatose, you know, I'm out of the film. It plays with the pacing just enough to kind of pull you back in each time.
I think that's right. And I think like, especially during those scenes where they are taking the characters off one by one, you do find yourself wondering, I found myself curious which one was the alien.
Right.
Even though I didn't care about any of the characters, from a plot perspective, I just wanted to know. I wanted to know what was going to happen. I kind of wanted to know what was going to happen when they figured it out, because I didn't. You know, you know that it's you're expecting that same reaction that we had in The Thing, which as soon as you test the one that's the alien, they're going to have a flip out moment. What's going to come from that? Just unfortunately, the results are that we end up with kind of a shootout going on, and I don't know how well that worked.
Well, and I think maybe a better comparison, instead of continuing to compare it to The Thing, I think it's more akin to the movie that came out a few years ago, Shyamalan, Devil. Yeah. Maybe it's more like that, because here again, you've got a situation where you know one of these people is secretly something they aren't claiming to be, but like Alien Raiders, like you don't really give a shit about who it is or why or any of that, but it's you're interested enough that it's like, I paid my money, I want to see how this plays out, but tomorrow I'm gonna forget which one it was anyway. So,
well, I mean, the other thing, the film does play with you a bit, and again, I mean, I don't know if it's spoiler or not, but there ends up being multiple aliens in the store, and they're looking for a particular one,
right? They call it the King, and I think we can be safe in saying that it's not really, other than the final scene, like, okay, we won't spoil that, but the rest of it, like, none of that was really significant enough to be terribly impactful. Yes, there are multiple aliens. It's the King that they're looking for, but that part of the plot didn't really get explained terribly well, because they keep mentioning that it's so poetic that they're now back at this particular supermarket, and this is where the King is, because this is where it all started. And I think that they even say something like, you know, we're going to die here, right? And it's like, well, that's fine, because, you know, we'll end it where it began. And I don't feel like they ever really explained what that meant. And I don't know, it was just, I feel like they were trying to throw more out there to kind of add a little bit of intrigue, but it really just kind of fell flat. Like, so the story here isn't really that deep.
And I think where a lot of the problems came in there is they're trying to give us this impression that they are returning to where they started, and they drop those lines, but they're also saying, well, we can't leave because they call him a spotter, which is the guy that could see the aliens in their human form. He says they're here and we got to find him here. And it's like, well, if this is where it all started, this should have been the first spot you checked, right?
Right.
Like, they're reusing the plot from Reign of Fire, where you got to track the King dragon in that movie. And if you kill it, then the rest of the species will die off, because there's only sort of one male. But again, it was in that movie, they obviously had to go straight back to London, because that's where dragons are from. And in this case, if they knew that the aliens started out here, they should have known the King was there the whole time.
Well, and I think that kind of opens the door into the next little discussion I want to get into, which is nitpicking, or just there were some major problems here that I think this is part of why I fell in that kind of, you know, less than 49% category on this film. And I find it, you know, interesting that we've now referenced a couple of previous episodes, but the next one I'm going to go to is I found that through the second half of this movie, once that reveal is made and we know, okay, here's the infected person, I feel like this movie started falling into a lot of the exact same plot holes and pitfalls that you were complaining about last week with Holy Ghost People. When we were talking about that movie, you complained that there were lots of plot holes and lots of scenes where characters were doing something that just made no sense for no reason other than to further the plot. And I'm not putting this all on you. I agreed with you. You just happened to be the one that brought it up. And I feel like in a lot of ways, this did the same thing. There were, I mean, right off from the beginning, why were these people taken on the guise of robbers? Like, if you're on a mission to come into this supermarket to kill an alien that you're hunting, I understand you can't just walk up to the customers and be like, hey, we think you might be an alien. Do you mind if I touch your head? Like, I get that, but that's a big leap from going from that to, hey, we're going to walk in with masks and guns and start killing people and lock the place down. Like, that just seems like the wrong way to go about.
Yeah, I agree with you. And when you take it a step further, it's revealed later on that these people, at least some of them, are like scientists that discovered the aliens through studying this meteorite and whatever else. And you're sitting there going, well, so wait, you're like a scientist who also just blows people away like this and takes on this guise of the robber. And again, it's like your character isn't developed well. It's not consistent.
Well, and it would make sense, too, that you wouldn't. Okay, you obviously have enough skill or technology or insight to be able to track it this far, but am I completely off base to think like you could track it another day to where it goes to a place that doesn't have 30 people in a crowded supermarket, like, and narrow your...
Just handle the situation better. I mean, you've got all these hostages that you need to test. Get them all in one room and pull them out and have the spotter look at each one individually.
Right.
And I also felt like it's like, well, they know what they're going up against, but they don't seem to have a very good plan for how to kill it.
No, I don't.
You're supposed to be prepared, right? It's not like they stumbled into this situation. So there's a lot of these problems that are, I mean, they are nitpicky, but they bothered me while I was watching the film. And that's the sure sign of a real problem with the movie is when you're watching it and you're noticing these problems, and you don't have to think about it afterwards.
Well, and another, you know, my last perfect example of this was toward the end. We've got the cops that are all there. These are the hostage negotiators. And yeah, we know that one of them has a connection with one of the hostages inside, but basically they've negotiated a trade-off. Like, this negotiator is going to be able to come in, and he's got a ex-con that they've released from jail, and they're going to bring to the alien raiders inside, going to take her inside and exchange her for a hostage. He gets inside, and these criminals have basically just told him, like, hey, you know, we're here because we're tracking an alien. There's an alien in the building, and that's why we're here doing this. And his response is essentially, well, okay, let me grab my gun. And from that point forward, he's helping them. And I mean, that right there, like, just completely sucked me out. Like,
you're pretty right. Yeah. I mean, you can't, all of the characters in this film are really inconsistent, and their behavior changes drastically from scene to scene. I mean, whether it's the stock boy who's like a hero in certain scenes and just like a loser in other scenes.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? There's a lot of that. There's also some like unnecessary fake tension with some cops that are in the store when the robbery happens and this kind of thing where you're just like, for starters, just the fact that they announce that the town has 25,000 people, but they go to the grocery store and there are two police officers in there, just completely independent of the fact that anything else is going on. Just shopping. One is buying like tampons and the other one is there to buy Raid or something. And you're just going like, why? What are the odds of that? That seems unusual to have two plainclothes police officers in the same building in a town that size.
Yeah.
You know, those, and it's completely nitpicky to bring that up, but it's happening in front of you and the film is not interesting enough, in my opinion, to cause you to not think about these things. And I mean, I think just really this film just never found its ground. It never became, I don't know if it's supposed to be an action adventure movie. I don't know if it's supposed to be a horror movie, a sci-fi movie. I don't know what it's supposed to be. Maybe it's trying to be all those things and it's just not quite managing to pull them all off. But
I have to imagine that it's at least somewhat homaging horror, because did you catch the line there toward the end? And this is the girl who was in season 4 of Dexter. She's
the scientist woman that's part of the raiding team?
Yes.
Okay.
She shot the alien that she very clearly yells out, I shot it 6 times. Like,
I didn't catch that.
Halloween reference? I mean,
interesting.
Gotta be, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I will say that. I mean, the film, I feel like there's obvious The Thing references.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea of having this group of people coming in and trying to kill off the aliens with only certain people able to see them is definitely a reference to They Live.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like a really good scene in the movie is when one of the aliens is pulled out of its host and it's trying to get back in. And I felt like they were referencing a film called The Hidden, which I'm actually a fan of from the 80s. And it's got a similar looking sort of alien thing that goes in through humans' mouths in order to possess the body. And I thought they were kind of recreating a scene from that. So maybe they are really trying to pay homage to all these things. Or maybe we're reading way too much into this the way we tend to do.
Maybe. Yeah, I would say that by and large, it was not a terrible film. And there was definitely enough entertainment that, you know, I made it through the whole thing. And it's, I guess that's a compliment. But no, I mean, there were good scenes. There was good tension. I thought that even though, like I said, I didn't really care about the characters early on, I was invested enough that I wanted to see kind of where the mystery was going. And that kept my interest for sure. I did not think the characters were portrayed very well. And I thought the story was kind of a mess, but I still appreciated what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, the film had a few good things going for it. I mentioned that scene where the alien is exposed, and it did look really cool. We've talked about some of the gore and a little bit of the tension that really worked. And there were a couple of neat ideas in the movie. Two that I liked were, instead of having traditional exposition scenes, they actually had the police searching the van outside the store and replaying back tapes that they found. There's like camcorders, and they found them, and they're playing back the video and watching like previous raids in other locations, and that's how they were getting their information, rather than having somebody just sit and explain what's going on, which I thought was good.
But that was another weird thing. Like, why were they videotaping? Like,
I'm going to give it to them that they did start out as scientists, and I'm going to go ahead and say because they started out as scientists, they are still documenting their procedures, but it's not properly explained, and I'm giving it that because I thought it was neat, so I'm trying to justify it, but it's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I thought was really interesting that they didn't delve into was the spotters, the ones that can see the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
It's explained that what they are is they are drug users who are infected with the alien beings, but it doesn't take properly because of the drugs in their system.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got them now, because they've been infected, they can see the aliens in the other people. But the interesting part about that is they have to continue using the drugs or else they get taken over as well.
Right.
And I thought that was an interesting idea, pretty unique idea. I don't think I've seen that used very often, but it isn't really that well explored throughout the film.
Yeah, it could have been a neat little thing to play into a little bit. And I kind of felt like the girl that they had to go get out of prison as the exchange, I thought she was the most interesting character in the film.
And oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I thought she was funny. I thought she had some great lines. I thought she was a good actress, and just throw more scenes of her in there. Like, I liked her a lot, and she was the one that threw out some of those little lines of, I can't remember exactly how she phrased it, but yeah, the drugs are what keep it away, and this is how it, you know, it's,
yeah,
we've been touched and we've been affected by it before, and it's,
yeah. There's a moment, and I'll give a lot of credit to the actress, where she's being transported to the scene, and we see her in the back of a police car, and she's handcuffed, and she manages to get out of them, and we later learn, I think the idea here is that she's only able to get out of them because she's been infected by these aliens. But when she gets out of the car and they let her out and she just kind of steps out and hands the cop back his cuffs, and just the way it works, it's like a really funny little moment where it's like, well, wait a second. Like, the cop clearly isn't expecting her to have the cuffs off. And I thought it played really well. Yeah, it was a really funny moment. And it was like, again, that actress deserves a lot of credit. She's not, mm-hmm. I don't know who she is, but she was, it was a great little moment. And this film had a few of those. Like, I almost feel like this would have worked as a short film that ended before all of the violence and chase scenes that happened in the last half of the film. You know, if you made this into a 15-minute short where you only had the testing scenes and the opening kind of tension, and didn't kind of fall apart the way the actual movie does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Maybe as a little anthology or episode of a show or something like that. Like, yeah, there's, because I definitely felt like this was two movies in one. So even if you separated those two, like, well, we know what happens with the second half. That's what Splinter became. But yeah, you know, it's two very different ideas. And I think that either one could have worked maybe better if they had been detached from the other.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, all right. Well, general recommendations. Would you tell any of the listeners to go check this out, or they're on their own, or?
Yeah, I it's not something I'd recommend to everyone. It's certainly something that I think there is an audience for sci-fi horror. There are people who just love it. And this film is a fine example of direct-to-video sci-fi horror. It's not particularly good. It's not terrible. It has some neat ideas. Are they fully explored? No. Are you going to predict who the king alien is? Probably you're not going to. Once it's revealed, I think there's no point in discussing the reveal. It's revealed towards the end of the film. And I didn't know, but I can definitely see how the hints are there. If you're really into the film and you're really looking for it, you probably could guess it. So at the end of the day, I think the film is just, it really is just, it's an hour and 25 minutes long or something, and it feels stretched out.
Yeah.
And maybe, like I say, as a Masters of Horror episode that was, 50 minutes long, it might have worked.
Yeah, I think, for me personally, I've got enough movies on my to-do list that if I didn't have to watch this for the podcast, my recommendation would probably be I would have rather seen something else. So I don't know if this sounds like something that's up your alley, or if you were just, a diehard Splinter fan from when we talked about that, then yeah, you might enjoy this, kind of get more of the same, but from a slightly different take, a little bit less isolation, a little bit bigger cast.
A little less fun too, so... IMDb says that if you liked Splinter, you'll like this. I don't entirely disagree with them, but Splinter was a lot more fun to watch.
All right, so now let's move on to my pick for this week, which was 2012's Bait, or Bait 3D. Now, we're continuing here with supermarket grocery store horror, but completely other side of the ballpark from Alien Raiders.
Yeah, completely different movie. Completely other side of the world. Almost everything is completely different.
So in this story, long story short, it's the movie starts out with Josh, who's a lifeguard. He and his friend Rory, I believe was his name, they're hanging out kind of hungover after an engagement party, because Josh, who's our main character, had just proposed to Rory's sister. The next morning, they were kind of debating as to who has to go out and check on the buoy. Rory goes out for Josh, who's too hungover to do it, gets out there and is attacked and, spoiler alert, killed by a giant great white shark. Well, we kind of flash forward a little bit ahead, and there was a little bit of conversation between Josh and his new fiance, Tina, about some trip to Singapore. They didn't really explain how that all played out, but through a flash forward, he is now working in a grocery store there in Australia, no longer a lifeguard. Long story short, he's in the grocery store working one day. Whole cast of characters, about a dozen or so more people, come in, including yet another robbery. I don't know why that's such a running theme in some of these movies. And there's a tsunami, hits the store, the place floods, traps everybody inside, and we have a shark.
Yep.
We actually learn, maybe minor spoiler, it's not the only one. There are actually two sharks in the movie. I don't know if that was supposed to be kind of a twist or not, but...
I didn't take it as one. I don't think you're spoiling much here.
You see that the movie kind of takes place from two different perspectives. There's three characters who are trapped in the parking garage. Everybody else is in the store itself, and it's kind of a flooded stairway to connect the two. And both are dealing with a shark, and early on I assumed that it's the same shark, maybe going back and forth between the two locations. And then there's a scene where one shark is injured, or there was an incident with one where it was tagged in such a way that clearly, well, the other one's still active, this is a second shark. But
it's really interesting to me that I've heard a couple of people say that they had trouble telling whether it was one shark or two. I thought it was two right away. I don't know why. It never even occurred to me that there was a single shark that was swimming back and forth.
Part of me, I think it was just because in either one of these cases, neither location was huge. And I would think that if there was a 12-foot shark swimming through the aisles of a grocery store, like, you'd see it the whole time. And there were definitely moments where they were kind of not paying attention or not staring at the water. So I thought, okay, it's somewhere else now or out of sight. So.
Now, I never had the impression that either of these sharks was as long as 12 feet. I don't know whether they said that in dialogue or not, but definitely looking at it, they certainly didn't seem to be that big.
Yeah, they measured, because it was when the shark was first swimming around, and I think it was Josh, who's Mr. Aquatic Expert, Yeah, and kind of said it's easily 6 feet from dorsal to tail fin, and it was his ex-girlfriend that's throws out. That means it's a 12-foot shark. Like it was okay. a line in there, but
yeah, I remember that moment now. But I'm not going to nitpick in a film about sharks in a grocery store. I'm not going to nitpick how big the shark is. So no, whatever they said, that's how big it is.
I'll be right up front. I'm not going to nitpick anything about this. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it. I mean, the film is really fun to watch. It delivers exactly what you want when you sit down to watch a movie about sharks in a grocery store.
Oh yeah, there's no denying like what you're getting in for, and I like that the film is intelligent enough that it doesn't try to hide what it is. I mean, that seems almost ridiculous to say, because how could you pretend like this isn't exactly what it is? But they know what it's going to be. They wear it on their sleeves. They have fun with it. And they take it seriously enough that it's not, you know, comedic to the sense of, you know, a parody or a joke. Like, the gore is definitely real and in your face. There is tension. There is drama. There are scenes that, you know, you're kind of edge of your seat. But at the same time, you're watching a shark swim around in a grocery store.
They understand how ridiculous the concept is, and they play into it really well. Yeah. The director deserves a lot of credit for making this movie, because it's a hard line to walk when you have to figure out when to be humorous and when to be serious when you're talking about something as crazy as this. And I think they do it almost perfect as far as it goes. I mean, I don't ever find there to be a moment where even out in the parking lot, two of the three characters that are trapped are they're extras from what I imagined The Hills was like when that was a TV show. not that I ever watched it, but that's what these people are, what I think the people on that show are probably like.
Uh-huh.
They're never quite over the top enough to be annoying. They get into an argument because he's not caring enough for her little dog that fits in a purse, and they're yelling at each other and stuff like this. It could cross that line, but it doesn't.
You know who I'm saying? Oh yeah, exactly. And I mean, I found her very annoying, but in a comedic, intentional way. And what he kept reminding me of, and I looked at his IMDb a couple of times just because I was convinced I thought it was the Hobbit who was also in Lost. Like, that's who that character looked like to me. Like, and it wasn't, but looked just like him for several scenes, only with a, you know, surfer accent.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think, you know, going back to what you were saying about the director just doing a great job with this, I think the two things that stood out immediately when the movie started were, and these are things that as a horror fan just kind of made me cheer and smile and think like I'm in for a fun ride, were, number one, like I said, there were so many characters in this, and as a, you know, podcaster, I'm sitting there trying to take mental notes enough to be able to remember who's who and how is this person connected, because I knew I was going to have to recall it later. Luckily, it didn't matter. But it was the kind of thing where all of these characters just kept showing up, and it finally clicked with me that all they're doing is building up the body count. Yeah. And that's the whole point of every one of these people. And I just kind of smiled when it occurred to me, like, character introductions just to kill them, like, awesome. Like, that means we know we're going to get a lot of shark kills. And they were fun, too. This movie made me, for the first time ever, wish I had a 3D TV.
That's fair. I want to extrapolate on what you're saying about the characters, though, because with the director, he walks a really fine line where we get a couple of seconds with each character. We get to know them just enough that we remember. There's a cop who's there to pick up his daughter who's been caught shoplifting, and he ends up getting mixed in with the robbers that you mentioned earlier. And I never had a problem keeping track of who was who in this whole movie. I always knew, well, that's the cop and that's his daughter. I always knew that the daughter's boyfriend was the one that was stuck in the car park with the other two losers. I was able to really keep all that straight, even though they didn't have a lot of time with any one of the characters. And deep down, I'm just kind of hoping to see most of them get eaten anyway. I thought the film did that really well.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm just kind of going through. I think the other thing that just really pulled me in right away was I'm a big proponent for atmosphere and set. And as silly as it sounds to say that the grocery store was a great setting, It really was. And you got some great scenes early on of some underwater shots, especially immediately after the tsunami hits. We see, you know, bodies floating through the water and or just suddenly popping to the surface.
Yeah. I liked that a lot.
I did too. And it was like the aquarium of the dead, you know, but with mute background music to it. Like, it was very fun. The just the set all around was great. Underwater shots were fantastic.
The other thing that I just really thought was the all those underwater shots. There are plenty of other things that came in from the sea. It's not just like the sharks came in. We see jellyfish and we see other things like that.
Oh, so yeah.
Just to kind of like create that sense of like, yeah, this is water that just rushed in from the ocean. And we are given enough of time beforehand to understand that, yeah, this is a grocery store that is underground. So it makes complete sense that it would flood in the event of something like this. And all those little things are kind of covered off. The director does all those little things very well.
Yeah. I do want to say real quick and bring up another scene. And I thought that this was kind of just a little piece of evidence that the movie was more than just killer 3D shark. There were scenes that I thought were very tense, had some, I wouldn't go so far as to say drama, but just edge of your seat kind of tension. There's one character at one point who decides that, well, we see as the flooding continues that the water's continuing to rise in the place. And there's an electrical cable that's exposed and hanging dangerously close to the surface of the water. They know that they've got a very short time before they're all going to go up like fireworks. So they realize that the main power control is on the other side of the building through a little room, and they're going to have to swim or go in there. One of the characters volunteers and says, "I'll do it." And they kind of rig up this kind of ridiculous cage suit for him. And
why is that ridiculous? You need a cage if you're going to go in the water. There's sharks.
An iron cage, maybe. A cage made from egg baskets? I don't know.
I think they used some shopping carts to make that.
Okay. regardless, they create a homemade cage for this guy, strap some weights to his feet so that he can sink, get a long tube to tie it to a respirator, and basically are just feeding it to him. So he's going snuba style, you know, long snorkel as he's just kind of walking into the other room. And spoiler alert, it doesn't go well for him. And it's not a shark attack. He ends up drowning.
Yeah.
And it was a tough scene to watch. And I mean, this coming from a horror fan who's seen, I don't know how many different, you know, thousands of on-screen deaths, and very few of them are impactful or affect me in any way. But that was the kind of rare scene where it kind of made you sit there and go, oh, like, I felt that one. And that,
yep,
that was hard to sit through. And, it, you know, now,
well, I think
10 minutes later, you see a 3D shark again. But, you know,
I think what the director does right in that scene, and I agree with you, it's my favorite scene in the movie. But what the director does right is he's got everything is moving along really quickly. And we actually, you mentioned how they put together this whole suit, but they didn't really. He just kind of goes, wait, I have an idea. And then you sort of cut over to him. And when you cut back, he's wearing this suit and they don't do it. So
yeah,
you're almost laughing out loud at the suit. You're having a good time. You watch him jump in. The shark kind of swims by and nudges him and obviously can't eat him through the suit. The shark's smart enough not to try. And you're sort of having a lot of fun. And then he gets to that point where the cord that they had for him, the tube to breathe through, just isn't long enough. And he's got a decision to make. Does he sacrifice himself or doesn't he? And they've shown us that his feet are weighted down. We know he can't do anything in a hurry. And it's just that instantaneous moment where the reason that death is impactful is because we're smiling and laughing and, oh my God, look at that crazy sea. Oh shit, he's going to die. And I think it's just handled really well. I mean, it could be very cheesy in a different film. It's handled really well in this film. I really liked it.
Yeah, I was just looking. The main character from this stood out to me as somebody I knew, and I couldn't figure out where. So I was just kind of flipping through his IMDb. He was not a huge character, but he was a character in Fury with Brad Pitt, which I know had a pretty big cast, but he was in there. He was also the main guy from The Loved Ones from 2009.
Oh, that's right. Another little Australian flick that was really fun to watch.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing that I don't even know if we mentioned, that this film takes place entirely in Australia, which is key because in Australia, you should always be scared of sharks eating you at all times, regardless of whether you're on land or sea or whatever.
Or in a grocery store.
That's just an evil, evil continent where everything wants to kill you. We know that, right?
Yeah, bugs, ants, everything. It's
Yeah,
I've heard.
So
never been heard.
Oh, yeah. Why would you go? It's insane. You got to be a little crazy.
No offense to all of our Australian listeners.
Well, they're probably going to be dead before the next week comes out anyway because they live in Australia, so something will eat them.
Aww. Just a sad thought there, Doug.
If you go to Australia, you're going to get eaten by something. I'm not sure what, but it'll be something.
Quick question for you. I'm not a gun enthusiast, but do shotguns actually work underwater?
Okay, they do in movies.
Okay.
That's all I know. I know nothing about guns. But in movies, you can fire a gun underwater, and then you just kind of have to clean it later. Unless it's really...
Apparently, apparently Maglite flashlights are also waterproof, which I knew certain lights were. I've got, you know, scuba lights and that, but...
I actually think...
I've got a couple Maglites sitting around.
If you watch this movie close enough, I believe he puts the light in a Ziploc bag before taking it underwater.
Huh.
So there you go. You're silly for questioning it. The movie is actually right on. I don't know if
I'm glad I talked to you before I stuck my Maglite underwater because I was going to go try that.
It's not a good idea. I mean, do what you want to do, but
I'll go wait till one's about to break and then experiment, and I'll get back to you and let you know the
that's fair.
The results of Maglite immersibility tests. So,
all right, let's
yeah.
Get back
the only other place. Note that I okay. Is that our theme for the week? Shark movies?
I don't remember.
Yeah, the only other note that I had for the film was I found it borderline humorous, but also really odd that there was super slow motion action taser guy scene at the very end. Like,
yeah,
when
I'm not sure what they're going for there. Near as I can tell, I think that we both missed out because we saw this movie in 2D. And I think some of those scenes were clearly designed to be a lot more exciting because they were supposed to be in 3D. I mean, this film, it's hard to say because I watched it only at home, but I imagine in theaters it was a lot like seeing, I don't know if you saw the remake of My Bloody Valentine a few years ago, where it was like every kill, like the guy's throwing something and it's coming right out of the screen. It's that type of fun 3D movie that is not, they're not using it for like James Cameron. They're not trying to build depth in the scene and all this. No. It's about throwing stuff at the audience. And in this case, I imagine it's because those tasers were coming straight at you that's why they were in slow motion, just because that would have been fun to have happen.
Well, but I guess the difference between this and My Bloody Valentine, which, you know, again, I didn't see, but I heard plenty of reviews of it, was that I heard that movie really didn't have much substance to it, and it was purely a 3D gimmick with no plot, whereas even though as I was watching Bait, I was thinking to myself, man, I wish I had a 3D TV for this. At the same time, I enjoyed it perfectly well in 2D and think it's an absolute, you know, great movie to watch just with that. So that would have added, but I don't feel like it needed it to be enjoyable.
And I think that's fair. I think this film is good enough that it gets around that. But definitely, I think the effects suffer when you're in 2D. The effects did, in some scenes, feel a little cartoonish, especially when the sharks kind of popped out of the water and you're expected to believe that they were flying towards you, but in 2D, they're not. They just look like cartoon sharks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, maybe it's my own fault, but you know, with a lot of the 3D stuff, I saw that a lot of those movies as they were coming out were kind of more for the gimmick, and so I avoided most of them just to save my extra $3-4 or whatever, but
and I agree with you.
Man, now when I see something like this, I
wish I'd seen this.
I'm kind of mad at, you know, I'm kind of mad at 4 year ago me.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I think the film, it would have been more fun to see on a big screen with the 3D, but it still holds up as is. And I imagine you can just go out and buy yourself a 3D TV, and then you can pick up the Blu-ray of this with the 3D capability, and you'd have the same experience at home. So.
If there are any listeners out there who would want to contribute to the Scott being able to see Bait in 3D experiment that Doug just proposed, I will get you a bank account that you can send PayPal checks to right after the show.
Or if you just have a 3D TV and you want to watch this movie and call in and let us know what you think, that might be a more reasonable request.
Or what Doug said.
Yeah. Anyways.
So any last minute things you want to say about Bait before we move on?
Do you remember the part where that blade flew across the room and nailed that person in the face?
Yes.
That was awesome.
Remember the scene where the guy got bit in half?
No, you got to be a lot more specific.
Both of these scenes were ones that were just very clearly here. 3D in all of its glory, but yeah, there's a scene with somebody trying to escape through a duct, which at first we have some weird spider. I didn't quite understand where that came from.
Supposed to be crabs. They're evil Australian crabs that would have been washed in with the sea. Mm-hmm. I couldn't exactly tell what they were either. I wasn't sure if they were supposed to be spiders or crabs, so I actually Googled it after I was done watching the movie.
Yeah.
Apparently they're crabs.
Doesn't matter, because while you're trying to process what they were, the dude just gets bit right in half.
Yeah, I love that moment. But I think my favorite guy getting bitten in half was the one that is trying to grab onto the, I guess it's a freezer that they're hiding on top of, and they grab his hand and they're holding it tight and pulling him and pulling him and pulling him, and all of a sudden the head starts to float away and you realize he's been bitten. And they're still holding his arms, then they get that moment of realizing it and throwing it into the water. Fantastic moments in this film like that are just so much fun to see. I loved when they decided to try and catch the shark, and so they had to get like a hook, and they're using like meat from the meat department to try and catch the shark, and it's swimming and pulling them on the freezers that they're trying to stand on and everything.
Yeah, I think it goes without saying, we recommend Bait.
Yeah, definitely a really fun movie to watch, and it's like a good slasher film where it's like the characters aren't really well thought out and well developed, but they're all identifiable. You know who's who, you know what's going on, you know why they're there. Their motivations are, they make just enough sense to get them into the grocery store for the killer shark to eat them. I thought most of them were likable. I mean, the only unlikable characters were ones that were intentionally unlikable.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it had the little romance storyline that isn't necessary, but Hollywood thinks it has to be in every movie, so there it is.
Right.
Just so many fun moments of sharks biting at people and, you know, so many little things that this film gets right. The only real complaint I would say is some of the cartoonish graphics that are just, they're not fair in comparison to the rest of the film, and I think that just has mostly to do with the fact that this is supposed to be seen in 3D.
Right. Yeah, so all in all, big recommend for Bait. Go check it out. If you have a 3D TV or know somebody that does, try to convince them to, I don't know, like, does that even work now? Like, I know that the 3D TVs were a thing, but, like, you can buy 3D versions of movies now, right? Does it work as well on the TVs?
I've never actually watched a 3D Blu-ray on a 3D TV, so people do it, but I don't quite have the budget to be out buying another TV just so I can have it for 3D purposes. So
I feel like that was one of those technology things that, you know, that I'm actually kind of surprised that the 3D in the theaters is still kind of sticking around, but I wasn't sure that.
Well, I keep waiting for them to mass market a relatively cheap 3D TV that works on theater glasses so I can go see the 3D movie and bring the glasses home with me. And then have 10 pair in my house for when I have people over. My big concern was that a lot of the 3D TVs they brought out were, you had to buy the $50 pair of 3D glasses that plugged into the TV. And at that point, I'm not going to do that. So.
Right. Yeah, I think I've been in a couple houses that claim to have 3D TVs, but I've never actually seen a pair of glasses on anybody. So I don't know. That just seemed like one of the kind of gone by the wayside home theater things, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
We'll see.
But alrighty. Well, I would say we've had a pretty interesting jaunt through some grocery store horrors. Definitely saw some things I never expected that I would see. And we can thank the podcast for getting some very unique films into me.
Yeah. And more to come. Wait till people find out what we're doing next week.
Can't wait.
We're happy to have you with us this evening and want you to enjoy every minute of your stay here. And while you relax and stretch, visit our concession where you'll find something to please you. There are ice-cold drinks, delicious sandwiches, ice cream, coffee and snacks, and many other pleasing treats. Our foods are fresh and tasty, our drinks satisfying and refreshing. They're so good.
Hey, Doug, guess what?
What?
We got some fan mail this week.
Somebody took the time to email thelasthorrorcast@gmail.com and send us a letter?
Not only that, but somebody also took the time to send us in a voice message.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, so we're moving up in the world and actually growing, and we wanted to at least take a minute to acknowledge the people who have taken the time and wanted to be part of the show. So we've gotten the go-ahead from both of them to read this on the air. But first, we have an email from Chris in Toronto. Chris writes to us and says, "Hey, fellas, I'm currently typing this while standing in line for the last Midnight Madness screening at the Toronto International Film Festival, The Final Girls. I just wanted to say thanks for their great podcast. I plowed through all three episodes while standing in these ridiculous lines, and for that, I thank you. Most of the podcasts I've ever listened to over the past 10 years were already well into it, so it's nice to get into something that's in the early stages for a change. Anyway, looking forward to more discussions. Chris in Toronto. P.S. Couple of flicks from the Toronto International Film Festival that the listeners may want to add to their radar if they haven't already. Green Room and The Witch." Well, I want to start by saying, Chris, thanks for the email, and glad that our podcast could help you get through the lines. And Doug, I've never been to the Toronto Film Festival, but I was kind of surprised to think that these lines would be that bad. Like, are you a...
They are terrible. I've been a couple of times. I was at the world premiere of The Ward a few years ago, and then I made it to the world premiere of Kevin Smith's Tusk when it was at Toronto, I think just last year. And the lineups are... What they do is they'll sell you the ticket, but it's first come, first serve seating. So you are, the earlier you get there, the more likely you are to get to watch the red carpet, and the more likely you are to get to, you know, meet a celebrity or get a good seat once you're inside for the actual screening. So yeah, it is horrible, but it's also a really fun time. If anybody gets a chance to go to TIFF, the Midnight Madness is so much fun because all those people in line are nerdy horror fans like us, and you get to meet cool people and have fun discussions and eventually get sick of the people around you because you're standing beside them for 3 hours waiting for you to start.
Well, and apparently there's some pretty good movies that you can see if you are able to get there and actually get into the films and get a seat. But of these two that Chris mentioned, Green Room and The Witch. Now, Green Room I had not heard of, had not seen anything about, but The Witch, I can't remember what it was that I saw a trailer for this in front of a few months back, but I have seen a trailer for this and it definitely caught my attention. So I was glad to hear that he has now seen it and recommends it, because that just furthered the idea that I want to be checking this movie out when it becomes available.
Yeah, you can almost, with TIFF, you can almost just go through their Midnight Madness screenings and add all of those to your to-watch list, because they do a really good job of selecting very good movies to show at their festival. And they do, because they have that Midnight Madness section, they just grab some great horror films that are upcoming and they throw them out there. And you're not necessarily in competition with all the artsy stuff that would play during the... So
yeah, this is a festival that's, you know, kind of all-encompassing in terms of genres, not just horror, correct?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest movie festivals in the world. It's comparable to, you know, Cannes and stuff like that. And if you watch the news, you'll see, you know, all the Johnny Depps and stuff showing up for their day-to-day appearances. But if you stay till midnight, all that goes away. The geeks come out and we take over the night. And it is a really fun time to go.
Sounds interesting. Maybe one of these years I'll have to put a few bucks together and drive myself up there and check it out.
Yeah, we'll see. If we decide later if you're allowed across the border. So,
yeah, customs might be a question, but we'll see how it goes.
All right.
So then that leads us into our first voicemail that we have for the show too. And this is from Anthony, who you may recognize, and he mentions that he is active in the Horror Etc. forums. He called in and wanted to give a couple of thoughts on, or a couple episodes ago when we talked about Splinter. He had caught up with that and wanted to give some thoughts. So let's give that a listen here.
Hey, Scott and Doug, this is Anthony. You know me from over at the Horror Etc. forum. I wanted to congratulate you on a great new show. It's nice to have thoughtful discussion in this space. I've had to wade through a lot of garbage to find good shows, so to have you two guys very thoughtfully covering interesting themes is a really welcome addition to that space. So, good job. Love the topics you've been covering. I've got to catch up with the Bigfoot films you've covered. I bought a copy of Willow Creek to go through. But I have seen Splinter, which was covered on your gas station horror show. And I wanted to talk about that briefly. Splinter, I found it to be a really fun, creative exercise. I like the whole siege mentality of the film. I'm drawn to situations like Night of the Living Dead or Assault on Precinct 13. Anything where people are trapped in some space. It all, you know, goes back to movies like Rio Bravo, which inspired John Carpenter to do a film like Assault. But in this one, we've got a really interesting creature. You've got to give them a lot of points for creativity. And the whole setup was pretty impressive. I liked the story that begins with this kidnapping, and then it's kind of a out of the frying pan and into the fire situation. You know, the kidnapping is bad enough. They find themselves stuck in this gas station being, you know, assaulted by this creature. So a word about the effects. I took the time to check out the special features on that DVD, and I liked the whole approach. There was kind of a blend of CGI and practical, and it was really amazing to see how they put it all together and then to see the final effect in the film. Now, I don't want to say too much and spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but I heartily recommend this one. I think it's a good example of what can be done with limited means, and these guys pulled off really big results. You two guys are pulling off big results. I hope to hear more from you. Thanks again. Take care.
All right. Well, thank you, Anthony, for your feedback and for being the inaugural voicemail lever person.
Yeah. He said, and you know, lots of nice things to say about us and some nice things to say about Splinter. So it's good to know that the people listening are actually thinking about the movies they watch, because those are, I think that's kind of the audience we're going for, right? So.
Yeah. And I was chatting with him a little bit before he left the feedback and heard that we were doing the bait for this episode, and was debating whether he should leave feedback for that or for Splinter, and ended up going with Splinter. And yeah, I think that's good if people haven't quite caught up. So it was very enjoyable. And along those lines, I just want to give a very big thank you to everyone out there who is listening. The listener base grows every day. Our iTunes subscribers are, the numbers are constantly increasing. Facebook is getting bigger, and we're getting tons and tons of feedback. So if you've commented on Facebook or left us an iTunes review and we have not responded or commented, just know that it is very much appreciated. But if you want to be part of the discussion and be part of the show, you can always do that by emailing us directly at thelasthorrorcast@gmail.com or calling into our voicemail at 206-600-9711.
If enough people call in, we could even get a week off, right?
I suppose that's a possibility. And it's funny because I would like for people to start calling in a little bit more frequently, because the voicemail line that we have is one where if we don't get a call once a week, then we lose our voicemail number. So I have an alarm set in my phone that I have to call the number myself every Saturday just to make sure that it's still active. But so if people want to start calling more regularly and save me that trouble, that would be, you know, just another way you could help out the show.
Yeah, because I don't think we need to play voicemails of you re-reviewing the movies we talked about last week.
Yeah, or the 30-second clip that I make of, hey, this is just me calling to keep the thing active. But I don't know. Maybe we'll splice some of those in there. They could be entertaining. But
all right.
So what other ways do they have to get a hold of us, Doug, besides the email and voicemail there?
Well, I mean, they can always go through Facebook. If they search The Last Horrorcast, that's probably going to be the way that you can contribute the most to the community, is by going in there and posting your thoughts on what we've said or done, or on movies that you would like to hear us talk about, anything really. So yeah, just search that out and you'll find us, and feel free to comment as often as you'd like.
And clearly, you know, each week Doug and I are each picking our own movie and our own pick for each theme, but as we mentioned today, there are many, many, many more movies that fall into these themes. So if you've seen another grocery store horror movie or even a past episode movie that we didn't happen to pick, feel free to come in and give your thoughts, you know, through any of those methods, and we'd love to hear you. We're definitely not being exclusive.
No, yeah, for sure. We'd love to hear about more movies that fit into these weird little subgenres that we're discovering. So,
right. Well, if you ever forget any of the contact information out there, you can always find everything at our website, which is www.thelasthorrorcast.com. All our contact information is there, as well as direct download links to the show. You can also get to it from iTunes, where you can subscribe or download the show directly, as well as leaving us reviews, which is probably one of the best ways that you can help out the show and kind of spread the word and get more listeners involved. So any way that you want to contribute, it is all appreciated and it is all welcome.
Yeah.
Well, Doug, I think that just about puts a pin in this episode. I want to throw out real quick one last reminder for anybody who listened last week or who's been active on the Facebook page. If you are in the Central Illinois area this coming weekend, for those who are listening to this late, you might be too late, but I'm talking on September 26th in Gibson City, Illinois at the Harvest Moon Drive-In. They are having their fourth annual Fright Fest. There are tons of activities and events that are going on, including candy for kids and zombie walks and monsters running around in costumes, costume contests. But the big draw is they are having two different drive-in double features, one that is more family-friendly and for the kids, which they're playing Hotel Transylvania 2, followed by Beetlejuice. And on the other screen, they're playing Sinister 2, followed by the original Friday the 13th. I would highly recommend that anybody in the area who can get down there and see those, I would advise it. It will be a great time. And if you make it out there, I will for sure be there seeing Sinister 2 and Friday the 13th. So if you're going to be in the area and can make it out, email the show and let me know that you're coming, and I will save you a seat and we can watch some films together.
Yeah, and I once again will not be attending this rather cool event. I will be staying home to watch movies in my basement.
I told you, Doug, I'm going to have a chair there just in case you change your mind and split second come down. It's ready.
Yeah, keep it warm for me. I'll probably make the, what is it, about an 8-hour drive? Probably.
Give or take.
Yeah.
If nothing else, your chair can hold my beer.
There's beer.
Well,
should I leave now or?
There might be. I guess I shouldn't announce that. Legally, there will not be beer there, Doug. I don't know why you're putting these words in my mouth.
Well, my deepest apologies and most sincere apologies, too. I feel terrible for implying that you would drink at this event.
Yeah, shame on you. All right, Doug, before we wrap this up, I think we should give a little spoiler out there for the listeners for what we're going to be talking about next week. I think we are once again picking a topic that I've been listening to a lot of podcasts over the last decade or so, and I don't think I've ever heard this one done. So what are we covering on episode 6?
We're going to get involved into fairy tale horror.
Yeah, I don't know if we can go as far as to say that both films are Grimm's fairy tales. I know one is, and I'm not admittedly educated enough to be able to say whether they both are or not. But
my pick next week is 1996's Pinocchio's Revenge, and I'm reasonably confident that if Pinocchio is a grim fairy tale, this film is not going to follow it very faithfully.
Well, I've chosen 1997's Snow White, A Tale of Terror, which from what I hear is actually the most faithful adaptation of the Grimm story out there. So I'm a big fan of Grimm's fairy tales. I've got the complete collection and plan on rereading a couple of these before the show, and we'll see how close it lives up, but supposedly a pretty good performance by Sigourney Weaver. So
yeah, it sounds like once again we've picked two films that couldn't be more different, and we found a way to claim that they're part of the same subgenre.
Just another thing that makes us great. All right, so until next week when we tackle some fairy tale horror, I am Scott.
And I'm Doug.
And thank you once again for listening.